Hi, I'm Shashank Bhargav, and you're listening to Three Things, the Indian Express News Show. In this episode, we talk about whether sand mining in Haryana is worsening Delhi's water problems. We also talk about the people being held responsible for the Prime Minister's security breach last year. But first, we talk about sugar. At a time when India's overall exports have been witnessing a decline, the story of sugar is an exception. Over the years, India's sugar exports have been steadily going up. And last year, it actually became the second largest exporter of sugar in the world, shipping more than 100 lakh tons of it. But how did India manage to do this? How did it manage to utilize its sugar production so well? Turns out the answer lies in finding an edge over countries like Brazil and using sugar to make fuel. In this segment, Indian Express's Rural Affairs editor Harish Damodaran joins my colleague Anviti Singh to talk about India's successful sugar story.
So Harish, recently there was a report that suggested India's imports and exports have shrunk in many categories. But the sugar export tells a different story. So could you begin by telling us about the kind of sugar production that India typically witnesses?
See, India produces around, say, about 35 million tons of sugar every year. And our domestic consumption is about 27 to 27.5 million tons. Now, this consumption cannot grow beyond a point because most people, in fact, a lot of people are now reducing the sugar consumption. And it actually won't even grow at the rate of the growth in population. Generally, as prosperity increases, people's consumption of sugar, carbohydrates, etc. comes down, and their consumption of proteins, vitamins, micronutrients, minerals, etc. goes up. So we cannot expect our consumption of sugar to increase. So therefore, we have a surplus. So what has happened is that the government in the last few years, especially when, you know, there were huge surpluses, every year mills were having so much of surpluses and they were finding it very difficult to pay farmers, you know, because the cane farmers have to be paid. So there was a lot of accumulation of arrears, cane price arrears, which were owed to the farmers. So then that is a time when the government hit on a two-pronged strategy. The first was, you know, what is sugar? Sugar is ultimately nothing but energy. So sugarcane is basically an energy crop. So therefore, instead of crushed cane, you obtain the juice. Instead of crystallizing the whole thing into sugar, you divert some of those juice for making ethanol. So instead of crystallization, you do fermentation. So you produce ethanol and that can be used for blending with petrol, which means you divert your sugarcane juice for making more ethanol, which can be then blended with petrol. You know, already your petrol contains about 10% ethanol right now. And the government has a plan of making it, you know, 20% over a period of time. Of course, that would require, you know, new engines, etc. But probably the new cars which will come out maybe after 2024, they can accommodate 20% blending. In Brazil, etc., there are cars which can run on 100% ethanol. So about 4 to 4.5 million tons of the sugar which would have been made instead can be converted into ethanol. So therefore, 4 million tons is out. So then you have the gap, right? I mean, from 35 to 27, you still have about, say, 4 million tons gap. So that is what we are exporting. And that is where our success has been. I would say in the last, say, since, say, 2018-19, India has been both an exporter of sugar and also a diverter of sugar into ethanol. So both these I would call as very successful schemes.
Okay, so how much sugar is India now exporting and how does it compare to other countries?
So as far as exports go, the main exporter in the world, number one is Brazil. Number two is Thailand. Number three is Australia. So till, say, 2017-18, India was a marginal player. We were hardly an exporter. We were not exporting, I mean, maybe 1 million ton at the most. So from being a marginal exporter to becoming the world's second largest exporter, you know. So in the last sugar year, October 2021 to September 2022, India exported 11 million tons of sugar, okay. And of course, Brazil is still the leader. And I don't think we can export as much as Brazil. And we shouldn't also. Because Brazil has no other choice because they don't have a domestic market. Whereas India can export. So probably, I mean, in a normal year, maybe we'll have an exportable surplus of about 5 million tons. But last year we did 11 million tons because, you know, we still had so much of stocks. But I would say that in a normal year, about 5 million tons, we should be able to export 5 to 6 million tons. And about, say, 4 million tons, if we are able to divert towards ethanol, then we have a clear program where there wouldn't be any surpluses. There won't be any accumulation of sugar and farmers can be paid on time. I think that is the whole strategy.
Okay, so we talked about how India has been using sugar to make more ethanol and thereby taking care of a surplus problem. And in the meantime, we have also increased our exports significantly. But can you tell us what kind of sugar are we exporting?
There are two forms in which sugar can be exported. One is as white sugar. White sugar is basically the table sugar. And the second is what is called raw sugar. So raw sugar is what is converted into whites by refineries. Now, the sugar that we make in India is called plantation white sugar. It cannot compete in the world. It's not white enough. Unfortunately, you know, there are racial connotations. But when we talk of quality of white sugar, it is decided by how much white it is. Okay. So whenever India used to export in the world, it was always said India is exporting LQWs, low quality whites, you know. So then in around 2017-18, the mills and the government, they came out with a different strategy. They said, hey, why are we exporting white sugar? Why don't we export raw sugar? Okay. White sugar is what you and I consume. Raw sugar is what the refiners, that the processors consume. Okay. Most of the world trade in sugar is in raws. And that comes from either Brazil or Thailand, etc. So raw sugar is moved in very large vessels, you know, 40,000 tons, 70,000 tons. And it is moved in bulk. So it is raw and brownish and it has impurities. So it has to be refined. The impurities have to be removed. It has to be decolored. So there is a full process. So what India told the refiners in Indonesia and Bangladesh, etc., that look, we will give you raw sugar from India. And Brazil crushes cane from April to November. India crushes cane from October to April. So there is a time window which we can fill. Number two, there is the voyage time is less from India. If you were to export from, say, JNPT or from Mundra or Kandla to a port in Indonesia, the voyage time is 13 to 15 days. Whereas if it is from Brazil, Brazil has a port of Santos to Indonesia, it's about 43 to 45 days. So that is where India has an advantage.
Okay, one thing is that we can produce raw sugar when Brazil is not producing. And the other is that we can provide it much faster and the transportation cost is also much less.
Yes, precisely, precisely. So what is interesting is that Indian raws today fetches a premium over the world price, about 4% higher. Whereas our whites, as I said earlier, you know, low quality whites, they fetch a discount, maybe about $40 to the world price. So that is what has happened. And that is how I think we have become a very successful sugar exporter today. And today we generate about $5.5 billion, which is quite significant for a country and for a country which was hardly exporting. So in 5 years to become the world's number two exporter, I think it's an incredible achievement, though probably people may not notice it much. So, and that is one reason why we decided to highlight this as a case.
Right. And all of this is obviously great for the Indian economy. But what about the farmers who are producing it? Does this increase in exports benefit them in any way?
I would say the benefits have not percolated down to the farmers yet, except that I'll say that there is no arrears. But today, like, for example, the realizations from exports are much higher than from domestic sales. And whereas cane prices haven't gone up that much compared to what the way realizations for sugar have gone up. So I think, yes, the farmers are yet to see the benefit of this. But you need a strong industry. So 5 years back, if you had said that, you know, that India will manage to take care of its perennial problem of surpluses, nobody would have thought. But today, I think with ethanol and with exports of raw sugar, I think we have found some kind of a solution to this perennial problem of glut, and which is good in the long run. And hopefully those benefits should also percolate down to the farmers.
And next we talk about whether sand mining in Haryana is impacting Delhi's water levels. For about a month now, some parts of Delhi have been facing a lot of water problems. And recently, Delhi's water minister Saurav Bhardwaj said that this is actually because of illegal sand mining that is happening upstream in the neighboring state of Haryana, along the banks of Yamuna, which is one of the city's main water sources. When we spoke to Indian Express's Abhinaya Harigovind, she told us more about Bhardwaj's allegations.
Saurabh Bhardwaj had said that there are bridges of sorts that have been built across the river in parts of Haryana to facilitate mining. And it is on account of these bridges that the flow of the river has been stopped, because of which the river is running dry downstream in Delhi. And hence, Delhi as a whole has had a water shortage problem for about nearly a month now.
Abhinaya says that Delhi gets water from both the Yamuna and the Ganga River, and the Yamuna water comes down from Haryana.
It is delivered to Delhi through two channels. One is called the Carrier Lines Channel and the other is called the Delhi Sub-Branch. Some of this water also comes through the river itself, which is about 120 cusecs or so, which would amount to around 60 million gallons of water per day. So that is the three ways by which water from the Yamuna reaches Delhi from Haryana.
So to investigate whether the allegations made by Delhi's water minister were true or not, Abhinaya and her colleague Pavneet Singh Chadha visited two villages in Haryana. In this segment, she joins us to talk about what they found out. So Abhinaya, begin by telling us about the villages you visited and what were you trying to find out?
So we went to Memarpur and we went to the adjacent village, which is Tikola. So in both of these villages, there are companies operating. They have been given permits to mine river sand in the non-monsoon season. And when we got there, we found that there was one company which had recently ceased its operations because they had violated certain terms and they had stopped mining. A second one was continuing to mine. They are mostly mining sand from areas around the riverbed. So the companies there get permits to mine sand within a certain area. This can either be within the riverbed or it can be right outside the riverbed. But they get allotted a certain number of hectares of land that they can mine in. So this is essentially what we found. The companies use land nearby or they use their own land to stock up on the sand, which the buyers then come and pick up from that location. And yeah, it gets transported for construction purposes to other states. Gets used in Haryana itself, it gets used in Delhi, Rajasthan, Uttar Pradesh, many different parts.
And did you find any of those structures that Bhardwaj was talking about that supposedly blocked the river from reaching Delhi?
We did, actually. So he had mentioned one in Memarpur and we found one in Tikola, which is right next to Memarpur. So the Yamuna in Sonipat divides Haryana and Uttar Pradesh. So on one side of the river is Uttar Pradesh and on the other side is Haryana. So we actually spoke to a resident from Uttar Pradesh who was crossing over from Haryana to UP on the opposite side. Yeah, so there is a bridge that spans the entire width of the river between UP and Haryana. But at the same time, there are pipes underneath the bridge that have been placed to allow the water to flow from one side to the other. So when the Haryana government had responded to Saurabh Bhardwaj's allegations, they had said that temporary pipe crossings have been provided in these bridges and that the flow of the river as such is not obstructed. So this is what we found when we were on ground.
Okay, so the Haryana government is saying that although we have blocked the river through this construction, we have built these temporary pipes so that the water can reach the national capital. But do we know the extent to which these constructions are blocking Yamuna's water from reaching Delhi despite the construction of these temporary pipes that are supposed to help?
So we don't know what sort of impact these temporary structures might have. The National Green Tribunal is still trying to determine whether or not it has any impact and whether they can be permitted at all. So as of now, the tribunal has said that no further permissions should be given to construct such temporary structures. But yeah, that's where we stand. Experts also say that there could be some impact, but then there have been no studies on what sort of impact riverbed mining can have on the ecology of the river or on water downstream. So that as such is not quite clear.
And you mentioned that the National Green Tribunal is not sure whether these structures should be allowed or not. But do we know how they first came to be?
Yeah, so the Haryana government had issued a policy in 2021 by which they allowed this, in the sense that if the company wanted to construct this to facilitate mining, they can then write to the irrigation department in Haryana and the irrigation department would grant permission for it. So the irrigation department has actually submitted to the National Green Tribunal recently that they have actually granted permissions for this, even in Sonipat. So yeah, this is something that is now under the scanner at the NGT, because the NGT has asked the Haryana government to submit a copy of this policy that they have formulated.
And Abhinaya, could you talk about just the kind of water problem that Delhi is facing right now?
So this year, the situation has been particularly bad because it started early on, which is from about the end of February onwards. The Yamuna usually begins to run dry around April and May, which is the summer months. But this time, it was around February 25th when the Delhi Jal Board issued the first warning saying that the level of water in the Yamuna is low. So because of that, it's been quite harsh so far. But this is also because Northwest India as a whole has seen very little rainfall this winter. There has been a massive deficit across the basin states of the Yamuna in February as well as in March till about mid-March, till now, which is when we're seeing a western disturbance and a rainfall spell. So yeah, so I think from about the end of February to around mid-March is when residents in Delhi would have seen a significant shortage of water, because one is on account obviously of low water levels in the Yamuna, and also because the Delhi Jal Board has not been able to treat the water that is available in the Yamuna at Wazirabad because of what they say are high pollution levels. So the water treatment plants there are not quite able to process the quantity of ammonia that is present in the water there. And because of that, supply has been affected across the city for a while now.
Okay, so low rainfall, a polluted river that can't be cleaned fast enough. And on top of that, you have these structures for sand mining that are together compounding Delhi's water problems. But tell us, what do experts have to say about at least the sand mining issue? Because in the areas that you visited, the sand mining there is happening legally. So what do they propose should be done going forward?
So experts say that it's more a question of governance and monitoring, which is to ensure that the mining companies comply with the terms and conditions of their mining leases and of the environment clearance that they get from the Ministry of Environment, Forest and Climate Change. And the environment clearance stipulates certain conditions, which includes that they cannot go beyond a depth of 3 meters on the riverbed. And these conditions are to be monitored by the mining department of Haryana. So it is up to the department to ensure that the companies do not violate these conditions. Obviously, governance would be one thing to ensure that they do not violate these terms and conditions.
And in the end, we talk about the people being held responsible for the breach of security during Prime Minister Narendra Modi's visit to Punjab in January last year. On his way to the National Martyrs Memorial in the state, PM Modi was left stranded on a flyover in Punjab for about 15-20 minutes. This breach of security was caused by farmers who were protesting and who had blocked the route of his cavalcade. Now, more than a year later, the Punjab government has initiated action against a long list of personnel, including top police officials and a former chief secretary, for their involvement in the security lapse. Indian Express's Kanchan Vasudev joins my colleague Rahil Philippos in this segment to break down the Punjab government's proposed punishment and why it is taking action after more than a year.
So Kanchan, before we get into the punishment that these officials are facing, let's talk about what exactly went wrong in Punjab last year during the PM's visit. How did this security breach actually take place?
So this breach in Prime Minister's security dates back to 5th of January 2022, when he had to blow BJP's poll bugle at Firozpur ahead of Punjab Assembly elections. So he landed at Bathinda Airport in the morning, from where he was to go to National Martyrs Memorial at Husainiwala in Firozpur by helicopter. It was already planned, but then it started raining and visibility became poor. The Prime Minister waited for about 20 minutes for the weather to clear out. When it did not improve, it was decided that he would rather take the road to visit the Martyrs Memorial. So it would take him more than 2 hours. The Punjab police gave him the necessary confirmation that the route was clear, there was no issue anywhere. So he proceeded to travel by road only. when he was 30 kilometers short of National Martyrs Memorial and he reached a flyover, it was found that the road was blocked by some protesters who had brought their vehicles right up to the flyover and they were raising slogans. So the Prime Minister's convoy waited for 15 to 20 minutes at the flyover itself. So this was a major security breach. And it was decided that the Prime Minister would cancel his schedule and he would return to Bathinda Airport only. So he returned to Bathinda Airport, from where he returned to Delhi. He did not address the rally that day and he couldn't even go to the Martyrs Memorial.
Right. So a full year has passed since the incident and the MHA had then sought a report from the Punjab government on why the security breach had happened. Why is it that we're seeing action being taken against these Punjab officials only now?
So more than a year has taken place ever since the incident took place. Both Punjab and central governments, they were holding their independent inquiries into the incident. When the Supreme Court stepped in a week after the incident and said that it would stay the inquiries, such a sensitive issue concerning Prime Minister's security cannot be left to one-sided probes. The apex court then constituted a retired SC judge committee led by Indu Malhotra. The committee submitted its report on the 5th of August. After this, the center wrote to the state, nudging the government to take action against the officer, but the action was delayed. Now the center has asked for the action taken report from the state, following which the state government has sprung into action.
Right. So like you'd mentioned, the Home Ministry had sent the Punjab government a directive asking it to take action against the people responsible for the security breach. How did the Punjab government respond to this?
So Chief Minister Bhagwant Mann has now ordered the personnel department to initiate disciplinary proceedings for major penalty against former DGP Siddharth Chattopadhyay, Inderbir Singh, who was the then DIG Ferozpur Range, and Harmandeep Singh Hans, the then SSP Ferozpur, when the security breach took place. The state government has already sent an interim report to the center stating that they are now taking action. So, the inquiry committee has indicted all 9 officers, including former Chief Secretary Anirudh Tiwari and the DGP Siddharth Chattopadhyay. The committee report has said that Chief Secretary Tiwari could have deputed any officer to travel with the Prime Minister's convoy. But in his testimony, Tiwari had told the SC panel that Husan Lal, the then Principal Secretary to the CM, was to join the PM's convoy as the nominee of the Chief Secretary, but he had tested COVID positive. So he could not accompany the Prime Minister. For the DGP Chattopadhyay, who had cleared the route, the panel had said that the entire attitude of DGP was of indifference and dereliction of duty.
Right. And the Supreme Court committee report hasn't explicitly mentioned the punishment for these officials, right? But what has the Punjab government decided their punishment will be?
So the Chief Minister has ordered that disciplinary proceedings for major penalty should be started against former DGP Chattopadhyay, former DIG Inderbir Singh and former SSP Harmandeep Singh Hans. And for the rest of the officers, he has said that they should be issued a notice as to why disciplinary proceedings should not be initiated against them. In this case of major penalty, the government sources say that those serving officers could be dismissed from the service, they could be demoted, and in case of a retired officer, their pension could be slashed.
Okay, so the Punjab government has taken the first few steps towards penalizing these officials. What happens next?
Now, as per Article 311 of the Constitution of India, everybody who's accused of something is given a chance of hearing. So all these officers would also be given a chance of hearing. They will be asked to submit their reply. An inquiry officer would be assigned to listen to them. And then after getting their replies in the case, their case would be handled accordingly.
You were listening to Three Things by The Indian Express. Today's show was written and produced by me, Shashank Bhargav, and was edited and mixed by Suresh Pawar. If you like the show, then do subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also recommend the show to someone you think will like it. Share it with a friend or someone in your family. It's the best way for people to get to know about us. You can tweet us at Express Podcasts and write to us at podcasts@indianexpress.com.